Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. I'm joined today by Scott Moritz. Scott is a Senior Managing Director at FTI Consulting, and we're going to be talking today about the processes for conducting an internal investigation. Scott, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today, and let me dive in with our first question. To make sure an investigation goes well, it's best to have everything in place even before you start it. What I mean is it's best to have the policies in place even before there's an allegation. Overall, what should the policy framework contain for an investigations process?
So thanks, Adam. So the policy framework should contain a few things. It should consider the different categories of investigation that could happen or have happened. And by categories, I mean things like human resources, cyber, privacy, financial crime, accounting, compliance, corporate security. And why that's important is the composition of the investigative team may need to be different based on what broad category that investigation may fall into. The framework should also have somewhat of a desktop reference of the steps that should be taken in most instances for these different categories of investigation, who should be on point, sources of information, internal and external, privacy and legal considerations for each of these categories of investigation, such that when an alert comes in, it could very quickly get routed to the correct category and responsible individual who can then quickly put together a team and begin executing on those minimum investigative steps that are set forth in that desktop reference. So that's, in broad brushstrokes, what the policy and framework should include.
Now, you mentioned that the framework should contain who's the team that should be involved in conducting an investigation. What's the team that should be involved in the actual creation of the framework?
It's very similar. You want it to be inclusionary. Obviously, ideally, the person that is taking the lead should have some investigative background. And most often, that would be someone in compliance or legal. You're going to want to hear from these other constituencies that are tied to the different categories I mentioned just a moment ago. Once that is, in draft form, it's always a good idea to maybe run it by outside counsel or maybe a consulting firm with which you have a relationship that has a frame of reference and maybe, is able to benchmark peer organizations to tell you whether your policy and framework are kind of on point.
Yeah, I think you make a really good point there is even when you're done, you think you have it done, it's always good to run it by others to get an additional opinion and see what you might be missing. Now, one question that often comes up is what should be handled in-house versus what should be handled by outside counsel or an investigative firm. What's a good rule of thumb for deciding so that you know early on whether or not this is something you can handle or you need to bring in someone else for?
Well, that's a great question and it comes up regularly. I mean, it's just deciding, whether the investigation should be done under privilege should certainly be a conversation that's early. I mean, ultimately, it's a management decision. Likewise, a lot of those initial facts will drive to what extent you need to immediately consider engaging with outside counsel, or is there that intermediate step where let's conduct a limited investigation using largely company resources to test the merits of the allegations at hand to see whether a more fulsome investigation is warranted under the oversight of outside counsel. And some of the variables that would dictate what of those two options you may want to take is, I mean, like some organizations go so far as having a kind of a decision tree baked into their investigative policy. You know, some of the variables are how specific were the allegations at hand? Is there an indication in the case of a publicly traded company that the conduct might be material to the financial statements and then may be of interest to our outside auditors and our shareholders and maybe, you know, and would require disclosure? You know, are there allegations against senior leadership? Is the information so detailed that it suggests that this is a highly placed insider in a position of authority? And then also, you know, does the allegation indicate that they have already notified outside parties, law enforcement, the SEC, what have you? And if any of those things are present, you know, organizations tend to skip that triage, you know, intermediate investigation and go right to outside counsel. Whereas if those variables aren't present and maybe the allegation is kind of vague and difficult to sort of gauge as to whether or not, you know, at least on its face, it seems to have merit, you know, that maybe intermediate, you know, investigation using in-house resources, you know, a targeted investigation, try to test the merits of the allegation is a valid good step. So that's a fairly common filter that a lot of organizations apply in making that determination.
You know, one of the things you said struck a note is that, you know, as you start an investigation, you typically don't have all the facts. You've got to go learn more to see if it's real or not. A potential downside as you collect all that information is scope creep. I mean, new stuff comes up that may be part of the initial allegation or may suggest other issues that are real. How can you set up parameters that help ensure the investigation doesn't end up boiling the ocean, if you will, of, you know, making you end up going everywhere in every direction, looking at one allegation, another, a piece of evidence here, a piece of evidence there, which, you know, is important to see what's real or not, but it can lead you off in so many directions, you're really not going anywhere.
Really good point, Adam. And you know, listen, investigations rarely follow a straight line. And sometimes, you know, the allegations are spot on and everything the reporter says or turns out to be accurate. Sometimes none of them, but sometimes you end up going down a path that wasn't contemplated. You know, it's very helpful to kind of think through, you know, an investigation, particularly when you're venturing into the unknown in phases. You know, in this initial phase, we're going to do the following things. It's going to take, you know, this amount of people, this amount of time. And one of the outcomes of that initial phase will be, you know, our best take on whether any of the allegations seem to have been substantiated. And if so, what the scope of any subsequent investigation should look like. You know, I think a lot of times scope creep is not a function necessarily of investigations and venturing into the unknown. I think it's, you know, often it's a function of not talking about where we are versus the original scope, budget to actual. You know, nobody likes to talk about those things, but that's a, you know, it's very important, you know, for a client to be know where they stand. And, you know, because ultimately they're responsible not just for overseeing the investigation process, but they're also, you know, they're charged with, you know, being a good steward of the company dollar. And that means, you know, having a good handle on the budget. So, you know, good regular updates that include not just what's been done and what's been learned, but where are we budget to actual? And, you know, has anything happened to suggest the need to maybe revisit the work plan and the scope.
Yeah, it's always good advice to take a moment every now and then to look at where you thought you were going and where you actually are. Now, a key part of any investigation is the end of it and reporting the findings. What should be done at the outset to ensure that the final report truly addresses the initial allegations?
Well, I mean, that's also a really good point. You know, I think a lot of times in whistleblower matters, the manner in which the allegations were made to a certain extent dictate what the report looks like, right? And sometimes, you know, you'll receive a letter or, you know, information that is very organized and sometimes you get one that's a little bit stream of consciousness and it's kind of all over the place. Some things that could be corroborated and other things that can't be, and that may need to be reorganized in terms of how you present the findings. But, you know, ideally what you want is to recite and restate the allegations that were made and the investigative steps that were undertaken to try to determine, you know, to substantiate or refute, you know, each of those, and then what the findings were, including, you know, to what extent, you know, a given allegation is substantiated. So, you know, you definitely need to lay in, here's what was alleged, and then, you know, kind of then step by step, here's what we did to, in an effort to you know, corroborate, and here's what we learned. Because that's, you know, otherwise it's, you know, you make it difficult for the reader, you know, to determine, well, did, you know, was it fact or fiction, right? And I can't even see what it is that you did, or I'm not clear on what the allegations were at the outset. You know, deliverables, you know, written reports should be in plain language. They should be very straightforward. And they should tell a story that's very easy to understand. And the report should also stand on its own. You know, anything that you state that, you know, that's factual, it should be supported, including, you know, by, you know, evidence maybe underlying the facts that you noted in the investigation.
Well, thank you, Scott, for sharing those insights into what's always a challenging issue for organizations. I mean, few things are as fraught as investigations are. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen today. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SECE and HCCA saying, I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.